Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 16th of September 2013, the podcast that skips to Maloo, and sometimes even three of them. This is your host, Shane Killian, and this week the podcast is getting a little crowded. Joining us today are Jonathan Loche, Tim Dyson, and Dave Turcotte. Guys, welcome back to the show.
Howdy.
Hey, everybody.
Great to be back.
It's great to have you all on at the same time. This should be interesting.
I almost didn't make it, but...
What happened?
Well, I ordered myself some dinner, and I accidentally locked myself out of the house.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I had to actually break in by climbing through the window. Of course, God knows, any cops go by, they see me with food trying to climb through the window, they'll just think, oh, God, he's got a burger and fries, just shoot to kill!
Been there, though, without the burger.
Yeah. Don't feel too bad, but... I recently moved into a new house, and the first morning after it, well, I moved into a condo. So when you go out the front door, it's like a common area. You need a key card to get back in. Forgot the key card. So I go around the back. Forgot I had also had, I put the chain lock on the back door. Started looking around, both make sure no one else is looking at me, and just gave the door one good kick, and the chain went about halfway across the room. So I'm just like, okay.
Chains don't really do anything. They're just there to kind of make you feel better.
I haven't bothered to put it back since. It's just like, not the way homeownership should start.
All right, well, let's see if we can lock out the news of the bogus. And our first story is about Syria. And I'm happy to report that all of our activism has paid off. Obama has actually backed off of his warmongering, and he's now going to explore diplomatic options like he should have done in the first place.
Yeah, but don't get too comfortable, because he says that's all still on the table, and he's got everybody positioned and ready to go.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's what he's got to do. It's pretty much what the military-industrial complex is pretty much the only thing keeping the economy going these days.
But Tim, he's supposed to be different from Bush!
Am I the only one who has forgotten that we were told all through the election of 2012 that we shouldn't vote for Mitt Romney because he'll get us into war with Syria?
How about back in 2008 when they were saying the same thing about how he was going to be the messiah who would get us out of war?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I believe Bush made that same promise too, didn't he? He said that there wouldn't be anything like that. Okay, he couldn't have seen 9/11 coming, but...
I've just come to the realization that we're just not going to be happy until we finally do... start a full-blown World War III. That's just what this is coming to at this point, and whether it's this or something else, we're going to finally piss off Russia or China.
Well, if Glenn Beck is any indicator, he's looking forward to it.
Can't we just make a big arena, put all the politicians in it, and let them get it out of their system?
I'd pay to see that.
Like the Hunger Games in reverse.
Yeah.
You guys read the Hunger Games?
No.
Oh, they are awesome. I just finished the whole trilogy like a week or two ago.
I saw the idea of the movie and I was turned off from it. The villains are complete cartoon characters I can't take seriously.
Yeah, well, in the movie they had to cut out so much.
Even that, as someone pointed out, I got an idea. Let's entertain the masses by taking the youngest and most able and thus most likely to oppose against us and teach him advanced guerrilla warfare tactics. Oh, damn, we are the stupidest evil corporation that ever lived.
Well, it's not just about entertainment, it's about keeping people in line, and remember, they all die except for one.
Yeah, and still, it seems like kind of a roundabout way to oppress people, and I really am wondering, how are these guys making money if they've already got it, if everyone else is, I don't know. The economist in me just screams out that this doesn't make any sense, no business would ever approve of this.
I like the movie ripped off Battle Royale. I haven't gotten around to watching Hunger Games yet, though.
But I think the point to take away from all this is... Yeah, I'm just waiting for the Obamatons to come out and start giving Obama credit for seeking diplomatic options. No, don't do that. He wasn't going to do that. It was only due to activism of, you know, people like us raising a stink about it that made him turn around. He saw which way the wind was blowing.
If they win, they win. If they lose, they win. If they tie, they win.
You know, it's amazing to me that they still cling on to his every word. I almost wonder how he does it. What, did he give them the evil eye, and then they just are suddenly under his hypnotic powers?
I think it's just a case of refusing to recognize certain clues that lead to uncomfortable truths. People have an amazing capability for that.
Vote Hypnotoad for president. Okay, moving on to our next story. We've been covering all of these efforts to get pirated music offline and going after the Pirate Bay and things like that. Once more, I have to give it up to Google. Google has refused to take down... search results going to the Pirate Bay homepage. And this happened last week after the BPI, and that's the British Phonograph Industry. And don't you love how they still have phonograph in their title? Something about the British is like this, because their big television magazine is called the Radio Times.
I wonder if their car manufacturing plant is called the Horse and Buggy Place.
Sure, why not?
Anyway, the BPI sent Google all these requests to take down like 2,000 different links to copyrighted music. They complied with them all except one, which was a request to take down the Pirate Bay homepage. And the reason why is because there's no links to infringing content on the homepage. It's just a search engine.
So let me get this straight. A private capitalist company is protecting people's rights from a government trying to infringe on them. Isn't this the opposite of what everyone says would happen?
Sounds about right.
Hey, good on Google for the first time. You know, I've been sort of, they've been letting them get chipped away practically since they bent over backwards to appease China's demands, and good for them.
Well, this isn't the first time. Apparently, they've sent like 171 requests, according to this news story, to Google to take down the Pirate Bay, and they just haven't done it.
Yeah, good on Google. I mean, we all know that the whole idea that piracy, which is a dumb word anyway, you know, the whole idea that it's somehow evil is just complete bunk anyway. Hell, studies done by the big media corporations themselves have shown that music downloads actually don't even hurt them at all. In fact, they sometimes help, and the pirates tend to spend 300% more than the quote-unquote honest consumers.
Yeah. Well, not to mention the fact the Pirate Bay has a lot of legitimate content. A lot of independent artists post their movies up there to spread them around. Bands post their songs. You can find Linux distributions and all other sorts of open source content. And of course, these all compete with the big media companies. So, you know, what's that old phrase about, you know, look at the conclusion, assume it's what was intended, and see who benefits. And I think it comes kind of clear that way.
I was just reading an article from Netflix. Netflix openly admitted that, yeah, we searched the Pirate Bay's, the most popular torrents for TV shows on the Pirate Bay, and that's what they go after, the licensed content.
Yeah, because that's a good measure of popularity.
I can attest to the fact that were it not for downloading, I mean, not specifically from the Pirate Bay, but were it not for the internet in general, I wouldn't know anywhere near as much music as I do, and I eventually went on a way to purchase the actual albums legally. And honestly, I can't thank the internet enough.
Well, that's how it worked in the 80s when I was growing up before the internet. What did we do? We recorded songs off the radio or copied our tapes and we gave them to each other. And that's how lots of music became really popular. It wasn't, you know, just hearing it on the radio station or whatever. It was people giving it to each other.
Yeah, I mean, this whole piracy thing, it's not a new thing. Everyone acts like this is some new thing. No, it's going on, and they only now decide to raise a stink about it. It doesn't really make any logical sense to.
No, they were raising a stink about it before.
Yeah, but they weren't really.
They were doing all that when the VCRs came out, and they were trying to go after people making mixtapes and stuff like that, and they just had no luck doing it at all.
And the funny irony about this, they claim it's costing them money. Guys, I ask you to look, take a step back. How much money have you spent fighting this completely hopeless battle? I'm willing to bet you anything it's more than whatever you claim you've lost from piracy.
Well, what they claim they've lost, if you look at like how much they claim to have lost per song times all the piracy they say is going on, it ends up being more money than exists in the entire world.
So people in other dimensions are stealing songs now or something?
I think the Martians are in on it now.
Of course, none of this has to do with the actual artists. Lord knows, you know, they don't actually get any of the money. Their money comes from mostly ticket sales and merchandising. It's those middlemen that we call the big media corporations that, you know, but what the hell do I know?
Well, the truth is, they don't like the fact that the world is starting to outgrow them, because now artists can get distributed through the internet. They don't really need them anymore. They're becoming unnecessary middlemen, and, well, they're dinosaurs who don't want to evolve. Well, sorry, guys, but that's how it is.
Well, thankfully, the free market is actually starting to innovate, because we have things like Spotify and Netflix and all this other stuff. Plus, you have websites like Bandcamp, where artists can go put their music up there for free, and you can listen to it or download it for whatever price you want, or none of that matters.
Do you ever hear how George Lucas actually saw the light? He used to attack people who posted this stuff online, but then suddenly realized, hey, wait a minute. These guys are advertising my stuff in ways that I never could. Now he actively encourages it.
I guess you could say that he was once on the dark side.
Yeah, got lots of complaints about George Lucas, but this is not one of them.
Where's my HD original Star Wars?
This time you'll be able to see the spots on the ground.
Give him time, he'll make a 45th version of it. You're listening to the Bogosity Podcast. You say you don't like Bitcoin? Why not? Oh, because it's not gold. No problem. Just go to coins.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to Coinable, where you can buy gold or silver coins or bars with your bitcoins, with literally up-to-the-minute spot pricing. Now there's no reason not to jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon. Whether you're a Bitcoin miner, service operator, Bitcoin business owner, or market speculator, you can get gold and silver from reputable dealers. And Coinable has Bitcoin liquidity for fast processing of your order. Coinable even utilizes a special shipping infrastructure to ensure that your investment arrives safely at your door. And you know what? By going to coins.bogosity.tv, you won't pay a penny more, excuse me, a Satoshi more for your purchase. But you'll help this podcast. You can even sell your gold and silver for Bitcoin as well. Coinable is your Bitcoin to gold marketplace. So go to coins.bogosity.tv and start turning your Bitcoins into gold now. Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy.com. I've been a satisfied GoDaddy customer for over 10 years now. Their prices are great, and their 24/7 support is second to none. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or many other services, and get 20% off by typing in the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet service. Get your own .com with a personalized email address or establish your online business in a snap, all for 20% off. And you'll help this podcast too. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. Welcome back to the Bogosity Podcast with John, Tim, Dave, and yours truly. And this next story is one where I just shake my head. There's an Indiana court ruling that's being hailed as this major victory by Daily Kos and other unthinking supporters of labor unions. What's happened is Lake County Superior Court Judge John Sedilla has ruled Indiana's right-to-work law unconstitutional. Okay, so right-to-work is where you don't have to join a union if you don't want to.
It's free. It's just basic freedom of association here. This is the problem. Unions have had their egos swell up so much, they can't imagine why someone wouldn't want to join them. Well, guess what? People do have their reasons, and they're not open to question by you. If they don't want to join you, that's their call. And if you're going to threaten them into doing it, that really doesn't speak well for how valid your union is.
Well, here's what's going on. There's a federal law which says that labor unions have to provide certain services to workers, even if those workers aren't dues-paying members of the union. The Indiana state constitution says that no one should be forced to provide services to someone without just compensation. So Judge Sedilla is saying that this right-to-work law violates the constitution because it says that workers can't be forced to join a union, even though federal law says the unions have to provide them with services anyway.
So don't provide the services. Why'd you go the other way?
They have to, according to federal law.
Well, then complain to the feds. Don't penalize Joe Worker. He's not responsible.
Yeah, it's this federal law that's unconstitutional.
You know, what's hilarious about this whole right-to-work fiasco, and, you know, we had that whole issue in Wisconsin a few years ago, and it's hilarious because you have all these people coming in and saying, oh man, all our rights are being taken away because people don't have to join unions, and they get all the hysterical and claiming, they're taking away our bargaining rights, and it's like, no, they're not. You know, all they're saying is that if you don't want to join a union, you don't have to, and I don't see anything wrong with that.
Even the name's nonsense. Right to work? No, you don't have a right. The only thing you have a right to is to not be threatened and to not be stolen from. And the people supporting this ruling, well, you're supporting stealing from people and threatening people for not doing things the way you like it. So you're the ones violating people's rights.
Yeah, but that seems like nothing out of the norm.
Okay, this next one's a weird one. It's one of those cases where someone in this story is being a moron. One side or the other is being completely stupid. But I'm not sure which one. Get this. Iowa has begun granting gun permits to the blind.
What could possibly go wrong?
So it's a case of dumb and dumber, then.
Yeah, this is one of the ones that I didn't know what the hell to think. It's just like, yeah, you could argue the Second Amendment, but they're blind.
Well, no. I mean, at first glance, it does seem to be pretty stupid, but now there are a couple of things you need to keep in mind. Visual impairment is a continuum. You have people who are only slightly impaired and have a little trouble seeing, all the way to complete and total blindness. So, you know, at what point along that do you say, okay, if you're this blind, you can own a gun, but no blinder? And the second thing is, there are techniques that visually impaired people can learn to learn how to properly aim and fire guns.
I once remember there was a story of a master archer who was actually blind. I don't know how he did it. I've tried to figure out how he does it, but somehow he does it.
Yeah.
In fact, he's amazingly good at it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just, you can say, you know, there's a reasonable case where, you know, you could say a blind person with a gun poses a clear and present danger if he can't see what he's shooting at. But at the same time, he should at least be able to, I don't know, pass a shooting test, you know, in one of those shooting galleries like they train police in, and so be able to demonstrate, yeah, see, I can do this.
Yeah, if he can pass the test, he shouldn't get special consideration just because he's blind, for the same reason you wouldn't do that for someone who wanted to learn to drive. Like, if you can't see well enough to do it, well, I'm sorry, you just can't.
But what role do you think the government should legitimately have in this? I mean, Tim, you're an anarchist. I mean, what would an anarcho-capitalist society do?
Let them take the test, same test as everyone else, and if he can pass despite his impairment, well, then there's no argument to be made.
What if he doesn't?
If he doesn't, well, same result as anyone else who didn't.
Which is?
No, sorry, we're not selling you because we don't want the public to think we're giving out guns willy-nilly.
Okay, so it would be the gun dealers doing it.
Yeah. Because, you know, gun dealers have to keep a reputation. People are nervous about guns, so gun dealers, it's in their best interest as a business to ease public fears. And guns falling into the wrong hands, yes, that is a public fear that they need to address. Otherwise, the public is not going to support their business.
You know, it's funny, too. They actually said that most of the people who get the gun permits, they do it online. So, can you just picture, like, a blind person trying to get the gun permit online?
Well, they have a Braille keyboard.
Yeah, blind people use the internet all the time. They got all sorts of things for that.
It's not like somebody filling out a gun permit with a Braille keyboard makes a lot more sense than having to have Braille on, like, a drive-through ATM.
Yeah, we've all lost sleep over that one.
I don't know. I can think of several reasons why. I mean, who wants to be manufacturing two different sets of keypads with these two different factories, just make them all have Braille? And also, you might have a blind person in the backseat, you know, you just pull up a little further and they can reach out the window and do it.
But anyway, this is something where there should be negotiation allowed, but it shouldn't be a hard or fast rule on this one. They should just be held to the same standards as everyone else.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those things where it's not quite black and white. There's definitely gray area here. You know, you want to be able to give them at least the same opportunity as everyone else. But at the same time, you know, you still want to be careful because, you know, it's kind of dangerous if they don't know what they're doing and they can't see.
Yeah, I mean, what's the difference between somebody who is somewhat visually impaired being able to own and operate a firearm versus some crazy redneck who's firing off shots after about 8 or 9 beers just because he was sober when he bought the gun?
That's true. You know, the blind person could be a lot more responsible than the complete idiot who can see perfectly well, but you don't want him to have a gun.
I don't see it being a huge problem. I mean, how many blind people are raising a stink about not being able to get a driver's license? Don't see many, because I don't really think anyone's going to want to take them seriously. I don't think they think anyone's going to take them seriously.
Well, that's the thing, too. I guess the one factor that nobody's really thinking about is just because you're blind doesn't mean you don't have common sense. I'm sure most blind people would think, you know, I can't see, this probably wouldn't be a good idea for me to have a gun anyway. Common sense just doesn't go away just because you're blind, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, a blind person could also be like a gun collector. He just collects them and he doesn't ever use them.
And if he is, he probably knows them well enough to know that, you know.
Well, like I said, some people, you know, if they're comfortable with the idea, they'll do it. And if they're not, then they won't.
Well, you're talking about fan fiction earlier. I don't know how many of you are Harry Potter fans.
I watched a little bit of it. I fell out of it as the books went on, got a little silly.
I love the books.
I actually only saw the movies, and I didn't actually see them voluntarily. I live with my dad, and every now and then, if he sees a Harry Potter movie, he likes the movies. He never read the books a day in his life, but he likes the movies.
The reason why I bring it up is there's an excellent piece of Harry Potter fan fiction called Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality.
Haven't heard of that one.
Oh, it's great. It's written by a guy named Eliezer Yudkowsky. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right or not. And he's a scientist, and he has kind of a parallel universe version of Harry Potter, where Harry wasn't raised by the Dursleys. Petunia married a biochemist, and he was raised in a house where he was encouraged to read and think for himself and things like that. And now he's gone on into the wizarding world. And it's really good. There's lots of good science in there. Lots of rational discourse going on that you wouldn't normally see, and kind of trying to do this scientific examination of the wizarding world.
It's an interesting idea. Like, how would a skeptic react if it turned out something supernatural was real? It's always an interesting topic.
I wonder what J.K. Rowling thinks of all that.
I think she's come to the same conclusion as George Lucas. You know, at first she'd like, oh, people are doing fan fiction, but I think now she's kind of come around and say, okay, people writing fan fiction is a good thing. As long as they don't make money with it, she's fine with it.
Yeah, as opposed to the guy who wrote Game of Thrones, you know, he wanted to sue the fan fiction writers and wanted to get them all jail time because, you know, God forbid anybody has fun with my series.
Hey, that's the only way we're getting an ending to Song of Ice and Fire until at least HBO gets to it.
I used to read fan fiction a lot when I was in high school, mostly on my favorite animes. And you had to weed through a lot of bad ones before you found the good ones. But some of the good ones, I just burned the midnight oil on them. Good stuff.
This is really good. And one quick thing is, if you haven't read all the books, there are going to be spoilers in there for what happens later in the books. So if you've already read the books or you don't care about it, you can read it. And the other thing is, it's not finished yet. So if you go up to chapter 96, 97, wherever he is now, I forget exactly where, but it'll just kind of stop while we're waiting for him to get the next chapter up and things like that. But just to kind of whet your appetite, I thought I'd read a little bit from chapter 60. There's no spoilers in here or anything like this in this particular quote, but he's talking with Professor Quirrell about Azkaban, and this is an alternative Professor Quirrell that doesn't have a Voldemort on the back of his head. You know, this is the real, you know, Professor Quirrell if he had never been taken over like that. And they're talking about Azkaban. That's the prison where they send magicians to, and there are these evil creatures called Dementors that, you know, basically suck their souls and take away their happy memories, and it's just basically the worst torture you can imagine. And Harry is just wondering how they could possibly do that. And here's what Professor Quirrell tells him. Welcome, Mr. Potter, to your first encounter with the realities of politics. What do the wretched creatures in Azkaban have to offer any faction? Who would benefit from aiding them? A politician who openly sided with them would associate themselves with criminals, with weakness, with distasteful things that people would rather not think about. Alternatively, the politician could demonstrate their might and cruelty by calling for longer sentences. You see, Mr. Potter, no one ever quite believes that they will go to Azkaban, so they see no harm in it for themselves. Console yourself with this. Those now prisoner in Azkaban voted for the same ministers of magic who pledged to move their cells closer to the Dementors. I admit, Mr. Potter, that I see little hope for democracy as an effective form of government, but I admire the poetry of how it makes its victims complicit in their own destruction.
Interesting. Very interesting indeed. I'm impressed. As someone who writes a webcomic myself, I wouldn't have a problem with people writing fanfiction on it. In fact, if anyone out there does, please tell me. I'll gladly give you a link.
All it does is just keep it in the public eye and make it look more popular. Yeah, but hopefully I've kind of whet your appetite for this. Go and check it out. All you have to do is just search for HPMOR, Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality, and it'll take you right there. So, happy reading. This is the Bogosity Podcast from Bogosity.tv. History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's Liberty Classroom. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, Liberty Classroom teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you'll get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. This is Dave, Tim, John, and Shane welcoming you back to the Bogosity Podcast and its biggest bogon emitter time. And the global warming denial sect of the internet is all abuzz with a David Rose article on the Daily Mail about how we really have global cooling. Quote, "A chilly Arctic summer has left nearly 1 million more square miles of ocean covered with ice than at the same time last year, an increase of 60%. The rebound from 2012's record low comes 6 years after the BBC reported that global warming would leave the Arctic ice-free in summer by 2013. Okay, so right off the bat, this is just incredible. You don't even have to read anything else or look up anything else to see the problem. Just right in there, you see the problem. He says himself that it's not an overall 60% increase. It's a 60% increase over the record low.
Wow.
I think that's what we call the "it works every time, 50% of the time" standard.
It's 60% better than the worst it's ever been.
So there's no way it couldn't be an improvement by that standard.
Gotta love them high standards.
Right. I mean, it's called a record low for a reason.
That's like saying, gee, I got a penny. That's all the money I have. I pick up another penny. Wow, I had a double my pay increase.
Yeah. It's up to 60% or more. That's what it is. He also ignores the volume of ice. Yes, it's spread over a greater area, but how thick is it? It's not as thick as the overall amount that he would have us believe. And in fact, the unmistakable trend here is just for the overall volume to continue to go down.
Yeah, it's not much of an improvement if all that ice is pretty thin. You know, you got a polar bear walking out there and all of a sudden he tries to step on the ice and next thing you know, you got a drowned polar bear because, oh, he wasn't expecting that.
That polar bear could swim.
Sure, ruin my story. Damn it, John Boy.
There you go, messing it up with facts again.
Yeah, I've seen this circulated a lot. Even Blame the First had it on his page. I haven't really kept up with the global warming thing. I think even if it's true, there's way too many false conclusions people draw from it. Like, that means we totally need government. That means we totally need to do this. Hold it. It does not mean that at all.
Yeah, they're kind of skipping over a few steps there. Well, and again, just by reading that one quote, he says that projection that there'd be no ice in summer by 2013 is 6 years old. More recent revisions have it at about 2040, with 2019 being the worst case scenario. So, you know, he's not even using up-to-date statistics. He's going back 6 years and he's just trolling through the data to find things he can use.
Trolling, what a proper word to describe what this man is doing.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just going everywhere, all over the social media. I see this thing everywhere.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, too. A lot of libertarians I know have been posting this, too. And you know, it's funny to me, they kind of remind me of anti-vaxxers. For some reason, it's like they're terrified of science. You know, God forbid we agree with science and support the idea of freedom and all that. For some reason, they think, oh, well, you think vaccines work? Clearly that means you want to force vaccination on my kids. Just like, you think global warming is real? You know, despite all kinds of scientific data supporting it. Then clearly, you think the government should force us to do some kind of thing about it. No, not at all.
You guys have any ideas about what you think would be effective against global warming that doesn't involve government?
Jacob Spinney once talked about a project some people were proposing, where they have a thing out in the ocean, I can't remember what it's called, that sprays seawater into the air, creating more clouds, which would cool the planet, and it would cost way more than that. What was that? The thing from Tokyo?
The Kyoto Protocol?
Yeah, the Kyoto Protocol. It would cost way more than that and be far more effective. The Kyoto Protocol would barely do anything even if everyone complied with it.
Do you mean it would cost less than the Kyoto Protocol?
Far less. A couple million to maintain it or okay. Something like that.
Because you said more.
So, oh, my apologies.
I don't know if that would work or not, though, because water vapor in the air only cools the planet when it's a cloud. When it's not a cloud and it's just water vapor, it's actually a warming gas. And I think the consensus is that water vapor is just kind of a wash. It cools as much as it warms, and vice versa.
But the thing is, even if global warming is real and all the things they say are true, is it bad? Is it our fault? And is there anything we can do about it? If there isn't, then we'll just deal with it as it comes. But whatever the case, the thing I can say for sure, trusting the government to handle it, no. I mean, government are the biggest polluters in the world by far, even if you don't count war. So anyone who turns to political solutions for environmentalism, I can't take seriously at all.
You're doing it wrong.
I mean, if I had the cash, I'd be in line at the Tesla dealership. You know, you're already seeing the insane demand that the Tesla has. I think a decade from now, it wouldn't surprise me. Assuming, of course, more government legislation doesn't come down the pike that's currently trying to screw with Tesla's distribution chain.
Yeah. Well, Tesla, they're starting to do a lot of things right with electric cars. They still need to work on things like the range. You really need to be able to go, about 300 miles without having to do anything like you can with a gasoline car. But I think the important thing is, though, what good is that if you just come home and plug it in and recharge it with electricity that's being generated with a fossil fuel plant? I mean, really, wind, solar, none of these things are going to be viable anytime soon. I really don't understand. I really don't get why the global warming people aren't more behind nuclear power. Because it has zero carbon emissions.
Oh, because it's got that nuclear word in it that just sounds so scary. And all over two incidents, one of which never really harmed anyone. In fact, it was an example of things going right. Three Mile Island, they stopped the reaction before anything bad happened. So that should be a success story.
Yeah.
Chernobyl, yeah, that's an example why you shouldn't let governments run nuclear power plants.
And Fukushima.
Hell, you could blame governments anyway, because if it weren't for them making nuclear bombs, people wouldn't be afraid of the word nuclear to begin with.
It's not even the same thing, really. Not at all.
It's not the same thing at all, but for some reason, people seem to have the connection to it for some unknown reason.
But if you total up all of the nuclear disasters, which is pretty much Chernobyl and Fukushima, they put about 20 tons of radioactive material into the environment all total. So that's like the sum total of nuclear over the whole time. Your average coal plant, when working properly, puts that amount into the environment in about 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, it's this grandfathering system. If your product got in before we all started getting hysterical over everything, it gets a pass, even if, by all standards, it's worse than the solutions being proposed now. Like, John Stossel did that test with an audience. He said, I just came up with a new fuel source. It's not cleaner than fossil fuels, but it'll reduce our dependence on foreign oil, which is good. Now, while oil is flammable, this stuff's explosive. And it's an invisible, odorless, tasteless gas. You would never know if your room was filling in it when you were striking a match. And asked an audience, would you approve of this product if you were a government worker? And he said, no, I wouldn't approve of that. He said, what's your stove? He says, it's gas. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
I mean, you can always, spin things like that. If you have the conclusion you want to get to ahead of time, you can always go through and look for problems with it, like the things that people do with, like, dihydrogen monoxide, which is water. They're putting dihydrogen monoxide in our water supply. Have you heard about this? This stuff causes, like, so many deaths a year, and it, does this and that, and it's used in industrial chemicals and all these sorts of things.
I once had a friend tell me about that story. When I was, like, 13, I didn't know politics from a hole in the ground. I didn't know anything. I didn't know any of this sort of thing. I heard that word, and I instantly said, isn't that water?
Yeah, dihydrogen monoxide.
I was a kid, and I saw through that. These are adults falling for this.
If you know water is H2O, and you sit there and think about dihydrogen monoxide, yeah, that's what it's going to be.
But that requires thinking.
Yeah. Well, that's the point. People don't think. They just, you know, jump on the bandwagon, go with what you say, and they'll sign your dihydrogen monoxide petition and, you know, act to ban water.
Or how about the one where they had a petition to ban women's suffrage?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like suffering, but they said suffrage. And when they told them what that really means, oops.
Oh, I didn't want to sign that.
Can we get a bill to ban stupid petitions?
If we can get a bill to ban stupid bills, too.
Yeah, but then we wouldn't have any bills at all.
And that would be a bad thing?
I see no problem with this whatsoever.
No, not at all. That's why they'll never do it.
All right, well, I think now it's time to deglorify this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
And Dave, since you nominated these guys, why don't you tell us about what they said?
Ooh, goody! We have two schmucks who decided that communism and libertarianism are apparently the same thing because they stated that libertarianism is the new communism.
And this is Nick Hanauer and Eric Liu posting on Bloomberg.com.
I prefer the names I gave them better. Two schmucks.
They should just do that every time they put buy two schmucks.
Indeed. In fact, schmucks is a word that people don't use enough. So anyway, I hope none of you guys have a match near you. And if you do, don't light it, because we got a lot of straw, man.
I can't wait.
They say that most people would consider radical libertarianism and communism polar opposites. The first glorifies personal freedom. The second would obliterate it.
Boom. Warning. Buzzword alert.
Yeah.
Yet the ideologies are simply mirror images. Last time I checked, when you look in the mirror, you get yourself back, not the opposite.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the kind of dualism that really signifies a dogmatist, and even if you do have two ideas like libertarianism and communism that are mutually exclusive, they can still have a lot of things in common. I mean, for the most part, we agree with communists about things like the death penalty, drug legalization. We both believe in a secular government. We're against government paying subsidies to businesses. And I think for the most part, we actually have the same goals in mind. Well, we just disagree on how to go about them. They think government is the solution, and we think it isn't. We should have people working voluntarily in the private sector to do these things.
Well, what's hilarious is, as Tim pointed out, they love using their buzzwords. Oh, they love using their buzzwords. First, they call us radical.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Always got to throw that in. Always.
Can they call us bodacious? At least then we've kind of got some good old-fashioned...
As I once said, did they call me extremist because I make certain moral statements and things like that? I explained to them, so you're saying consistency in principle is too extreme, better to be moderate in principle? I don't think you understand what a principle is here.
Like saying all rape is bad. You're just being an extremist. We need some rape. We need to find the balance between raping and not raping.
Yes, I don't want to cut out all your cancer. That would be too extreme. We'll just cut out parts of it. That's nice and moderate.
Well, how about this one? They also called us nihilistic.
Yeah, what was that all about? Nihilism is the rejection of all principles. But we have the non-aggression principle, which is a principle. And since we have a principle, how can we be nihilistic?
Yeah, I don't want to laugh, but at the same time, it's so laughable. They practically call us every name in the book, and they're not even making any real points here other than...
Well, paragraph 2 is where we see that this goes downhill. Let's start with definitions. By radical libertarianism, we mean the ideology that holds individual liberty trumps all other values. Wrong.
Warning.
Black flagged right on the first lap. Good grief.
Yes.
No.
Is it really too much to ask for people to understand what it is they're criticizing?
I mean, this is not a rhetorical question, people. Why don't you grow a pair and actually respond to the arguments we're making? It's not like it's hard. It's not like the information's unavailable. Dictionary.com is still there. I still keep pointing people to it. It's not hard to find.
Not to mention, you know, we don't bite. You can ask.
What trumps all is the non-aggression principle. Initiating force against other people is wrong. Doesn't matter what imaginative label you apply to it, doesn't matter what greater good you think you're accomplishing with it. Threatening people into doing what you want is wrong. That is the central tenet of it, and liberty is simply one of the consequences of that.
What I think is telling is the next two paragraphs begin with the word some. Okay, so we're going to be talking about some libertarians and how terrible they are. Well, you know what? Some liberals are racists. Some conservatives are murderers. Some Democrats are rapists. Some Republicans are carjackers. I mean, pick any group and then pick anything you can use to demonize someone. You can always find some members of that group who do that.
Indeed. Not to mention they also use the phrase fans, that they are fans of Ayn Rand. You know, what does that mean? Oh, you know, I don't really know much about physics, but I'm a fan of Albert Einstein, therefore he must be correct.
And they get even this wrong. To divide their fellow citizens into the makers in the mold of John Galt and takers in the mold of anyone not John Galt. I haven't even read the book, and I know John Galt is not the only maker in that book, so already we're getting the sense they haven't even actually read it.
Well, and can anyone find any prominent libertarian writers who do this? Did Harry Brown do it? Mary Ruart? Murray Rothbard? David Berglund? Do any of them do that?
Not that I'm aware of.
I don't divide people into makers and takers. Like, if you're hurt and need and ask your family for help or something like that, I have never rallied against that.
No.
I have never had a problem with that. What I have a problem with is when you use threats, when you get the government to force people to give it to you, when you, in the same sense that I would morally oppose a stick-up artist stealing from you just because he needs it for whatever reason. It's the exact same thing, because threats and force are wrong. Doesn't matter if a politician does it or if a stick-up artist does it. It doesn't make a difference.
And what's especially hilarious about this is you would never hear about this coming from, like, a biologist to describe nature. You know, this guy just arbitrarily casts people into groups of amphibians and birds.
Yeah.
You'd never hear, reptiles and mammals, what a monster. Only a monster would do this.
Which is ridiculous. It's not arbitrary. The reason why force is wrong is because it's a morally indefensible position. You can't morally defend force without contradicting yourself. It cannot be done, and therefore, force is immoral. It's quite simple. It's not like this is not made available.
Do they name any actual libertarians? You've got Ayn Rand, who was adamant about saying she was not a libertarian. You got the Koch brothers, of course. They're like the leftist version of the Bilderbergs or the Rothschilds or whoever. They even talk about Texas Senator Ted Cruz, you know, the highest aspiration of libertarians, and Grover Norquist. When are there any actual libertarians named in this?
They mention the Pauls, but honestly, only one of them you could really even consider comes close to being a libertarian, and then you got Rand.
Well, they also said President Paul, and I don't know if he's talking about Ron or Rand, but it doesn't matter. He says, President Paul would rule by tantrum.
Wah.
Shutting down the government in order to repeal laws already passed by Congress. What? By tantrum? I'll tell you the one way you can tell they don't know what they're talking about. Listen to this quote. Radical libertarianism assumes that humans are wired only to be selfish, when in fact, cooperation is the height of human evolution. Wait a minute, isn't the entire concept of a free market based on cooperation?
That's funny.
Wait, we're assuming people are wired only to be selfish? Where do they get this from? That's the argument everyone gives for why we need the welfare state to me all the time. Completely jumping the fence here.
Yeah. People are too selfish to be generous, so we have to have government do it for us. And of course, that government's not going to be selfish at all. Politicians are never selfish.
As they vote themselves more raises.
Yeah, actually, funny that you mentioned that, because part of it is through my job, I got to know these things. As part of the sequester, in fact, the maximum amount of food stamps any household can get in the U.S. is getting cut by about 20% come October.
Right, because they absolutely had nowhere else they could possibly have cut from.
I love this part. And it is fanatically rigid in its insistence on a single solution to every problem. Roll back the state. No, I'm just fanatically rigid in my insistence that the state is not the solution.
Aren't they the fanatics in insisting that every problem is have the state do it?
And the hilarity of all this is, behind all these straw man arguments, they even say some libertarians will claim we are arguing against a straw man and that no serious adherent to their philosophy advocates the extreme positions we describe.
Gee, where would they even get that idea?
That's exactly what you just did.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, blatantly. How? How can anyone be this dumb?
That's called poisoning the well. See, once they wrote that, then as soon as we said it was a straw man, then everyone else gets to ignore us because they said that.
Yeah, consistency in principle, not extreme. Stop with that.
I mean, roll back the state isn't even a proposed solution. Roll back the state is just back off, stop using force against us, and let us try a whole bunch of different solutions that we come up with and pick the one that works best.
It's just amazing to me that the complete inconsistency throughout this, the fact that they try to describe what they are, which is pretty much what libertarians are, and then say that libertarians are what statists are and claim why we need government in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
How could it be anybody else?
Like one of our regular users said, "You're projecting so hard we could use you to call Batman."
I believe that was me.
Okay.
I do that a lot, actually.
Oh. And if you want a reason to completely dismiss anything these guys say ever again, listen to this bit. Reasonable people debate how best to regulate or how government can most effectively do its work, not whether to regulate at all or whether government should even exist. So according to them, reasonable people work on the assumption that government should exist and rule over our lives, and there is absolutely no place in the discussion for whether or not government is even necessary.
And the reason this should be off the table is... they must have forgot that part.
Yeah, it's not the reasonable person who takes a whole area for debate off the table. Hey, I've got an idea. I say that everybody should be hit on the head with a 2x4 once a week. What do you think about that?
I don't like that very much.
Oh, what? What are you, an extremist? Come on, reasonable people debate how often we should get hit on the head with a 2x4. So we can debate once a week, once every 2 weeks, once a month. But reasonable people don't debate whether or not to hit people on the head with 2x4s at all.
So guys, should we debate whether or not we should kill 50 people or 100?
This just goes back to the whole divine right of kings thing. Like the fact that the king is chosen by God is just a foregone conclusion, no justification, no reasoning. He doesn't have to present any note from God. It's just said so, and there it is so. It's like,
I know.
No, you have to back that up. When people say, prove to me we don't need a government, I say, why should I have to disprove something that you never actually proved in the first place? You just asserted it and just assumed that was going to do the trick.
What do they say the alternative to the extremism of libertarianism is? It's an evolving blend of freedom and cooperation. You want to know what an evolving blend of freedom and cooperation is called? A free market!
Why does one have to come at the expense of the other? That doesn't make any sense. You can be free and you can be free to cooperate.
Well, yeah. You know, since when do you have to give up freedom in order to cooperate?
And government is neither one. It's not freedom because they tell you what to do. And it's not cooperation because cooperation has to be voluntary. Otherwise, it's just enforcing your will on people. That's not cooperation.
Well, honestly, I think it all comes back to our good old friend denial, where people assume we are the government. So therefore, if the government forces you to do something, well, that just means you're cooperating with everyone.
I read this entire piece and I only found one place where they made a testable claim. And this is it. Quote, "The relationship between social happiness and economic success can be plotted on a bell curve, and the sweet spot is away from the extremes of either pure liberty or pure communitarianism." The problem is that absolutely isn't true. Do it yourself. Take the countries, you know, listed in the Economic Freedom Index, you know, list them in that order, and look at wealth indicators like, you know, the purchasing power of the average person or whatever. It does not follow a bell curve. The more free a country is, the better off it is in pretty much every way. Even the poor.
Yeah, you know how else this article is complete garbage? It brings up our old friend Somalia.
Oh, boy.
A failed third world state is not proof that validates government, people. I don't know where you get that idea from.
Especially since it improved during the time it was stateless in every measure except for like two or something.
It's those magic three words that shut down the woos every time. People say, well, Somalia's bad. Compared to what?
Yeah.
Which would you rather live in? Would you rather live when it was under the tyrannical dictator who taxed everyone for 90% of all the tax money on war, imprisoned everyone who so much as looked at him funny, and displaced thousands of other people? Or would you rather live in it now?
Or would you rather live in stateless Somalia or in neighboring Ethiopia, where you could be killed if you were the wrong religion or even if your nose was too wide? I'm not making that up. They actually do that.
That's amazing.
Wouldn't doubt it.
And for the sake of being fair, I guess we can quote them, since Lord knows they don't actually quote anybody here.
Yeah.
Radical libertarians would be great at destroying. They would have little concept of creating or governing.
Yes, because governments don't destroy stuff. They'd never do that. Hiroshima.
Yeah.
Not to mention, Christ, we've all destroyed the broken window fallacy how many times now?
Yeah. Well, what does government ever create? Did government create the iPhone? Did government create the telephone? Did government create the car or the airplane?
Oh, they'd like to take credit for a lot of stuff, like the whole internet thing, even though what they created is nothing close to the internet we have now.
That's right, Tim, because Al Gore created the internet.
Right, and all it did was cause a whole bunch of problems. I mean, their stupid missteps are the reason why we have to put up with spam and why it's so difficult to secure websites and things like that.
True, but quite frankly, you know, the thing, it's not even just that this article is bad, which it is. But it's like boring fodder for libertarians. It's nothing that we haven't come across before. It's the same tired arguments, the argument of human nature, the argument of Somalia, the argument, which the human nature argument, they got backwards. I don't know how the hell they managed that. They bore me. I think they bore all of us by this point. Try something new.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like the creationists, you know, oh, the second law of thermodynamics, and you go, oh, yeah, second law of thermodynamics again. You know, that's how we feel.
Threats and appeals to emotion. That's all they got.
Yeah, they don't have arguments. All they have are threats. Agree with us, or these bad things are going to happen.
Come back when you got better arguments, because until then, you're just boring us to tears.
All of which pretty much solidifies Nick Hanauer and Eric Liu as this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this Is It Crowded in Here or Is It Just Me? Edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Please visit forums at bogosity.tv where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast is free but not free to produce, so please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page and give generously to keep this podcast going. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thank you for listening, and thanks once more to my co-hosts, Dave Turcotte, Tim Dyson, and Jonathan Lochey.
Ooh, it was fun.
Good times.
Until next time, here's a quote from Ernest Hemingway. Never think that war, no matter how necessary nor how justified, is not a crime. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.
Bogosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
So please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page and give generously to keep this podcast going. Hang on.
Is that your cell phone?
Perfect ending.
My cell phone goes off. Okay, hang on.
I forgot to turn mine off, actually. I'm surprised nobody called.